So, as Liam said when we started, my name is Kathleen Gray, and I work with the UNC Center for Environmental Health and Susceptibility. I'm the Community Outreach and Engagement Corps Director in that center. And we have about 40 researchers, safe travels, Liam. We have about 40 researchers who are looking at how various environmental factors influence disease outcomes. The diseases that we are looking at are a whole range, but include asthma, environmentally related cancers, obesity, and lead poisoning. So we span a lot of different disease outcomes, and we have toxicologists, epidemiologists, folks in medicine and pharmacy. So it's really an interdisciplinary center. And before I tell you more about it, I just want to say that I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interests to disclose.
I forgot that, but I don't either.
So I'm going to talk about this framework in general and then tell you, describe to you a case study from North Carolina that's focused on lead exposure during pregnancy, and then come back and reflect on, well, how was the framework useful to me, since we did do it retrospectively? You know, what did I learn from applying this framework that Christy has laid out for you to our lead poisoning project? So first I have just the simplified version that she showed and this bottle of glue. And that's there because the whole reason this conversation started is Katrina Korfmacher, who you saw pictured, who's at Rochester, brought up to us that we have an interesting opportunity and a unique challenge as university-based outreach programs to support community organizations, or in the case of my example, local health departments, state health departments, but non-academics in community change work. And part of what we have the benefit of is sustained funding. Now, in any given grant year, that may change. You know, we are also at the whim of funding, but not to the same extent that particularly community-based organizations may be. So since we have more stability and sometimes more different kinds of resources because we can draw on all different parts of the university, we can function. Katrina used the metaphor of glue. We can function as glue in these partnerships, holding things together. I have a slightly different take on it that I'll come back to, but her saying to all of us, well, I feel like sometimes we're the glue and I want to be able to better articulate that role, is what prompted this thinking that we're going to talk about today. So you saw Christy's model. Here's mine. I'm not going to make you look at this very long, I promise. I mean, I'll look at pieces of it just as she did, but I filled in all the generic headers that are in Christy's model with specific actions that relate to this partnership between the COEC, the Community Outreach and Engagement Corps, and the Women's Health Branch in our State Department of Health and Human Services. And we had a partnership that I'm going to describe focused on reducing lead exposure in pregnant women. So starting with the initiation phase, I mean, it goes back to 2008. We had our local health departments expressing some concerns about lead exposure, about women being exposed to lead during pregnancy and the potential health outcomes for their fetuses and children. And so when they approached us with these concerns, well, before they approached us, actually, so that was 2008, there were these concerns, and they asked for our help doing an informal survey over email just of all the health departments. We have 100 counties and 85 health departments in our state, and they wanted to know, okay, we've heard about this in some places that are lead hotspots, but is this a broader issue? Are people thinking about it? Is it on their radar? So here's a place where, in my diagrams, the blue text represents activities where the COEC took a lead role. The black text is where our partner, DHHS, Women's Health Branch, took a lead role. I do want to reflect what Christy was saying, is I view this whole process as one of contribution. So the blue, we didn't own that. We did each step that I represent, we did together, but we took more of a lead role. And it was easy for the university to create a poll, a survey with input from our partner, and disseminate it and get the feedback and analyze it, more so than it would have been for DHHS to do. So we implemented that survey, and we heard back from over, I think it was 65 or 70% of the health departments responded. No one was addressing lead with their pregnant women population, but everyone who responded was concerned about the potential exposure. Then in 2010, CDC came out with their guidelines for the identification and management of lead exposure in pregnant women, and so that prompted, I think, broader interest from the health department at the local and the state level to revisit this issue. And so then we worked with the Women's Health Branch to develop, you see a piece of this risk assessment tool that we jointly created for pregnant women, and we pilot tested this tool in two counties in North Carolina with more than 80 women to see did it help identify risks in the population. So that's the initiation phase. Then we moved to the advancing solutions phase, and DHHS convened a statewide working group. Again, that was really their lead. They were interacting with stakeholders beyond our core partners in the project. So they brought people from all over the state to think about how could we create an implementation plan that really addressed this need to identify women who are at risk of lead exposure and what could be done about it. So they brought together the group, and the group immediately zeroed in on maternal health agreement addenda, which I'll talk more about in a minute, but also said, well, we just need to raise awareness that this is even an issue. And so, again, they then came to us as a partner and said, can you help us create the educational materials, frame the education, and then go out and do it? And, again, because we have the support from NIEHS to do engagement, we were able to do to help them develop materials and do some broad education just on the issue of lead exposure in pregnant women. So we did that in this advancing solution stage. And then the work group really zeroed in throughout the process of education saying the maternal health agreement addenda is going to be our tool to address this at the policy level. And in North Carolina, these are agreements between the local health departments and the state health department that really that outline the scope of services. They address legal issues, a whole variety of how health care services are delivered by the local health departments. So, so when we get to the implementing change stage, this work group began to focus on how do we incorporate specific language into these agreements, and they proposed changes. And so now we're probably in 2012, so it's already been 4 years in this process that we finally get to having some changes proposed, and there was a lot of discussion, and DHHS really took the lead on addressing those policy changes. We, in the interim, because it was clearly going to be included in the maternal health agreement addenda, began training maternal health specialists and environmental health specialists in health departments. We did some in-person training, and we did webinars, and our first webinar reached over 250 people. We archived that webinar, and people are still accessing it. I don't remember the total, including the in-person trainings, but we were able to reach many more people, again, than our partner, because they just didn't have the staffing resources to do that. They did, since 2012, we have on an annual basis been incorporating these agreements to assess the risk of lead exposure among pregnant women and then test and follow up into the maternal health agreement addenda. But that brings us to, I keep going the wrong direction in the circle. That brings us to the final stage of sustainability, where we are. And this is the big challenge for us because these agreement addenda are static documents. They're good for 1 year, so they have to be renegotiated every year. So this, we have been able to deal with it. It is in a policy document with requirements for testing and risk assessment, but each year it has to be renegotiated. So we're continuing to do training, and then an exciting development was that a local health department in Hope County said, well, we want to create a policy template and make this a local rule. We don't want to have to rely on these annual agreements. What if we have a change in leadership, as you said? What if things change and we can't keep doing this? So can we create a local policy template? We provided input there, but again, DHHS really took the lead on that, and so in Hope County, they developed the local template and incorporated it into their rules, and they are now also an example to other health departments of that they could do this if they choose. So we are working with DHHS and continuing the process of education, the process of sharing information about the local policy template, about continuing to push for this to be included each year in the maternal health agreement addenda. And I would just say I think the sustainability piece is the most challenging because we'll see what happens. We are in policy change. We're at the mercy of the policy dynamics in our state or locality, and those things are always in flux. So what does this mean for the framework that we have tried to come up with to help us think through all of this activity with partner, non-academic partners? I'll say I found it to be, so we applied it, as we said, after the fact. We went back and said, well, here's a policy process we participated in. How does it map to this framework? And I find it to be useful in terms of identifying places where you can really be systematic and you can really identify data-based data metrics for your evaluation. So, again, I'll just have this up for a second. But, you know, you can look at in advancing solutions under conduct outreach on CDC guidelines. We could just count the number of people who participated in workshops, but that's not particularly meaningful. So So for us, we did a much richer evaluation, asking the health departments, you know, does this meet your needs? What are, when we share this information, what's missing? What else do you need to know to be able to educate your population that you're seeing? We asked the, we actually did in the pilot test earlier in the initiation stage with the women in the two counties, lots of questions about, do you even understand what we're asking you on this risk assessment tool? When you see these questions, what questions does it raise for you to prepare a health educator so they can answer those questions? And all of that can be measured and reported, but if you're really focused on bean counting, you're going to miss it. So I think the tool helps us get at some of those qualitative sources of data and outcomes and just metrics that we want to use. I think it's really useful in terms of documenting outcomes to people other than internally, to our partners, to our funders, to other stakeholders, particularly those elected officials, because when you look at that big circle, there are outcomes all around the circle that are important to different kinds of stakeholders. So I found it valuable in that way. And then Christy's question is, can this be used to scope new initiatives? I think it'd be most useful in that way. I can imagine if we had started with this document when we were planning, we could have been more thoughtful about the process. Now, I don't want to suggest that that it would be a panacea. Politics change, times change, unanticipated things happen. So we still might have, we might have been able to map one quadrant and something would change. But still, we have this tool to help us think about, okay, at this stage of the game, we want to make sure we have all the stakeholders engaged. And have we really thought about the broadest possible group? Or some of the other questions that are outlined on the generic piece that you have, I think it could be useful as a planning document if you don't adhere to it too rigidly. Okay, so I'm going to come back to that starting question. Were we the glue? And I never really liked that metaphor because even though you can build things with glue, new models or something, usually we use glue to fix something. And I didn't like the idea that, oh, the university's coming in to fix something broken. That's not how I view the partnership model. So glue didn't really work for me. So then I was thinking, well, are we oil? Something's working, but maybe it's a little tight. Maybe it could go faster, smoother. And certainly some of the examples I gave you where we did some of the surveying, we did pilot testing, our IRB moves a little faster than the DHHS IRB. So we were able to make things go faster and smoother in some situations. So maybe we were the oil, but that still has that connotation of something needs fixing, right? So then I went to duct tape. And you could say duct tape is for fixing, but if you have young children, like I do, teenagers, and you've seen that they can make wallets and belts, and they can make entirely brand new, useful, durable things with duct tape, I think that that's the metaphor that I want to stick with for today, better than these other two, because in our partnership with DHHS, we both accomplished more than we could have independently, even though it took a long time, faster than we could have done it independently, and for university units like my own, where we have a mandate to engage with communities, we must view our partners and all the richness that they bring in order to accomplish the biggest gains for all of us and for public health. So I'm sticking with duct tape. So I want to recognize, I mean, just wrapping up this example for you, our project lead, Amy McDonald. She did all the heavy lifting on this project, and she has left us to go to another local university, so she couldn't be here. But my partners in the COEC and at DHHS and all the local health departments who worked with us, and also Christy and Liam and Katrina Korfmacher and Oganaya, who you'll hear from in just a minute, all of my colleagues in thinking about this. Thank you.